The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1056. It's the 1st of May 2018. On the podcast today, I have Bert Monroe, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources, HUM. And Bert discusses their Q1 2018 production results and gives an operational update on its Yanfolila gold mine, which is now in commercial production. Also on the podcast, David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil, UJO. David goes through their final results for the year ended the 31st December 2017 and talks about what's coming up in 2018. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Feedback, FDBK, Andalas Energy and Power. It's Alan Andalas Green. It's ADL, of course. ECR Minerals, that's ECR ticker, and Expediator, XPD. And as always, are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bert Monroe, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources. HUM is ticker. Bert, thanks for joining me.
No problem. Hey, Justin, how are you doing?
Yes, good, thanks. And I assume you're all doing well at the company because you've just announced and released your Q1 production results and operational updates at the Yanfolila gold mine in Mali there. And we'll go into that in a bit, the details of that in a bit. Before we do, but as always, if people are new to investing, new to the podcast, or have not heard of the company, just summarise what Hummingbird Resources is all about, please.
Yeah, no problem. Hummingbird is an AIM-listed gold company. We recently brought the Yanfolila gold mine into production in December last year, and we've just declared commercial production as of the 1st of April. This year, we've also got a large and significant asset in Liberia called the Dugbe Gold Project. So under management, Hummingbird's got over 6 million ounces of gold across two major projects, as well as a suite of exciting exploration permits. And we are in positive cash flow with the Yanfolila gold mine having been in production now for a little over 3 months.
Yeah, and so that is exciting because, like you said, most companies...
It is, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, most companies have to look, you know, approach the market all the time, but now you've got cash coming in, so you've got an excellent, project going on there at Yanfolila. Let's go over some of the figures, because I know, what's your target production? Because you're almost heading towards that now. I mean, you, I understand you have to ramp up, but you're almost on target already, aren't you?
Yeah, so Q1 was always stated to be a ramp-up quarter, so we're always anticipating that you wouldn't be at full production. That's how mines work. In fact, 3 months is an extremely aggressive period of ramp up. A lot of mines take upwards towards 6 months to ramp up to commercial production. So really it was about getting the plant running how we wanted it. We obviously successfully did that over the quarter, announcing commercial production as of the 1st of April. So our production guidance for 2018, which obviously includes Q1, which obviously wasn't a full quarter of production, is 105 to 115,000 ounces for the year. Mm-hmm. In terms of what we delivered in March, which is obviously the last month of the ramp up quarter, we did 9,900 ounces at a little over 3.4 grams a ton head grade. So a really excellent month considering it was our still a ramp up month, the last one of those. So yeah, we're now running at nameplate capacity. Everything's singing on site extremely well, so yeah, very pleased.
And I'm seeing here the average price they pay was $1,332 per ounce, which is a decent price, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the gold price has been very strong this year. So yeah, it's been a good time to bring a mine on stream, certainly from a gold price perspective, amongst other things.
Yeah, and so people listening to this now, I mean, let's say they're not too familiar with grades and all that stuff, but what they do know about is cash. And so, I mean, if you're looking at that figure there, 1,332, so what is your all-in cost?
So the all-in cost, we haven't put costs in this deliberately. Ultimately, Q1 was a ramp-up quarter, so yeah, a lot of the costs were capitalized, and it wasn't about operating costs, it was about getting going. Yeah. That said, our costs were in line with expectation for the quarter, and we are very happy with where they are at. Going forward, in time, once we've got a handle on it, but just taking into account we've done less than a full month of commercial production, we'll put out a cost forecast for the year. But that said, we don't expect them to be out with sort of our expectations. So no, things look exactly sort of where we wanted to be on cost.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And you got plenty of cash in the bank by the looks?
Yeah, the cash position, $28 million, extremely strong cash position. So, and obviously now we're producing and we're in positive cash flow. So yeah, exactly. So we're in a very strong position.
Now, so like you said there, once this is up and you're nearing your monthly targets here already, as fast ramp up. So that's ticking over nicely. And I'm sure obviously there's, you know, running a mine is not simple. But then you, like you said, you've got other opportunities now, haven't you?
Yeah, I think the big opportunity for Hummingbird and the big win for us is the investment we're putting into exploration. Mm-hmm. So Dan's committed to putting in the region of 15% of our free cash flow from Yanfolila, which, you know, is in the order of $8 to $10 million we anticipate this year, which I guess will give you another indication of what our costs we think will be. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be targeting brownfield exploration. So that's already discovered, proven, indicated predominantly in some inferred resources, which we're going to be looking to infill, drill and convert into reserves. So what we are targeting is extending the mine life. And I think it's extending the mine life, but also potentially bringing forward higher grade forward in the mine plan, which would obviously increase your production levels as well. So I guess it's a twofold benefit. One is to extend the mine life, and the other benefit is potentially if you can bring in even better grade than what we're getting at the moment, you would obviously increase your production on an annual basis as well. So I think that's really exciting. And I think one of the reasons, well, the big reason for that really is that our mine life currently is around seven and a half years. And a lot of analysts look at that and they perceive that to be a relatively short mine life. And I think for Hummingbird, we've always been relaxed about that on the basis that we know the gold's there. There's 1.5 million ounces of resources outside of reserves, so not in our mine plan yet. Mm-hmm. That has been historically converting at about 55%. So if you take 55% of 1.5 million ounces and you think we've got a, you know, 110,000 ounce a year gold mine, you know, life of mine average, you know, you're adding a fair few years of mine life just from already discovered indicated resources, let alone going and doing proper greenfields exploration and following up on discoveries which aren't yet in resources. So I guess that's why we're excited about it and why we think it should have a big positive impact on Hummingbird, hopefully over the course of this year and further forward as we bring in those ounces into the mine plan.
Yeah. What do you find looking at the share price a bit frustrating, because you are now, you know, fully operational pretty much there and, you know, revenue generating, cash flow generating, and yet the share price, you know, since, I'd say, back, almost has moved. It's gone up and it's come back a little bit. But, you know,
we're cheaper now than we were when we were still in construction, still waiting to pour first gold. So, yeah, obviously it's frustrating for us, but ultimately, look, we don't sit here all day looking at the share price. To us, we're building a business, and we're building a business which we hope will become a much more significant business than it is today, and will become much bigger through the full development and full expansion potential of Yanfolila. Obviously, other exploration activities in Mali, Liberia, and also inorganic growth as well, potentially, if we can find the right opportunity. So we are focused on a medium to long-term strategy of building Hummingbird into a highly profitable, significantly larger gold company than what it is today. Mm-hmm. So looking at your screen on a daily basis, yes, I'm sure you'd pull your hair out, but that's not something we do. And I suppose, you know, I guess to stand behind what I just said there around our strategy, medium to long-term strategy, other big news in our RNS, which maybe some people overlook, is the appointment of Atty Roux and Ernie Nutter to our board of directors. Atty Roux was the ex-CEO of Endeavour Mining. Obviously, they've been a hugely successful gold mining company in West Africa over the last number of years. And Atty's been with them as they've grown from one mine to, I think, five or so they've got now. So he's an extremely experienced West African operator and a real great asset for us to get on our board. The other gentleman is a guy called Ernie Nutter, who had a long career with, amongst other people, RBC, and then latterly with Capital, one of the largest institutions globally and certainly invested in the mining industry. So he brings a wealth of capital markets experience to Hummingbird, and will obviously be a great person to give us advice as we grow the business. And yeah, so two brilliant hires and two guys who are really going to hopefully be with the company as it takes itself to the next stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the share price is just consolidating, which is quite, sometimes it's good to see that. And I know lots of people, well, I do, always try to avoid any kind of spike in price, But like I said, 2017 went well for you, didn't it? From less than 20 pence up to 40 pence,
Yeah, and I think the business obviously is changing. So you obviously inevitably have investors who love exploration and invest in exploration businesses. Yeah. And you have investors who like buying into developers and like seeing the development story if they back good management teams. Then you've got guys who like, steady state producers, and obviously we've transitioned in the space of 2.5 years through all three of those phases. Yeah. So there's going to be an inevitability sort of churn in your register from certain groups of people who have specific investing mandates, around the styles of companies they invest in. So I think sometimes particularly private shareholders take it extremely personally when they see someone selling, and they sometimes phone us up and say, who's the seller? Why are they selling? I can't understand why anyone would sell right now. And I think it's not personal. It is about, it's a business decision. Some funds invest in specific companies for specific reasons at a specific time. And when those parameters change, sadly for us, you do get a seller, and it's our job to focus on finding buyers. And that's, one thing we're starting to put a lot more time into is getting out and marketing. And I think one of the big benefits of this Q1 release is that it gives us the ability to get out there and shout about everything we've done. For the last, good few weeks now, we've known that we've been delivering on site and it's been excellent performance, but we haven't been able to shout about it because we haven't got out our results yet. So yeah. Now they're out, we can really get on that front foot and really shout about it, which will be great.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Bert, if someone's listening and they like the sound of this but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, the first one's probably the most obvious one, which is you can now buy Hummingbird cheaper than when we were not even in production, and now we've hit commercial production and we're hitting all of our numbers. Things are going extremely well. So in terms of producers, we're as cheap as they come, I think, yet we've delivered on all of our milestones on budget and on time. So we're extremely pleased operationally. The second one, I think, really is the growth story. It's about this $8 million we're putting into brownfield exploration to significantly extend our mine life, we hope, and potentially to also augment the production profile with higher grade coming forward, which would also make a significant impact for analysts valuing the business. And thirdly, it's about the team. And it's about the fact that we've not only bedded in an excellent operations team on site who are running it extremely well, it's also about, at the board level, bringing in real quality at the board level to help us grow into a medium to large gold mining business, which we're hoping to do in the coming years. So for me, those are the three reasons right now. Thanks.
Excellent, Bert. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Justin. No worries. Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. That's UJO ticker. David, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for asking me. Thank you very much, Justin.
That's all right. It must be a bit of a relief getting your final results out the way, because it's a bit of a job, isn't it?
Well, you can say that again. The amount of work that goes into actually putting an annual report together, an RNS, and all the statistics, and it's just really unbelievable. It takes 3 months out of your life. It really is, because we haven't got a lot of staff. You know that. There's only us directors, and we all muck in together. And I operate it from my office in North Devon, and also in Bath once a week. With the new company secretary, Matt Small. So amongst our small team, you're always battling to get it out. The auditors are very, very good. His BDO, really helpful. No, it's gone really smoothly. And what pleases me is done and dusted now. But the funny thing is, in June, we now then start on the interim. So it's like a hamster on a wheel, do you know what I mean? But the good thing is, it's freed me up and I can do what I'm meant to be doing some deals for the company. And we're looking at a few things I mentioned in the report. So, fingers crossed, and this year we get wrestle through everything. We've got everything to go for this year.
Okay, well, David, before we get into some of the detail, there are new listeners all the time. There are people obviously not familiar with the company. So in a sentence, in a summary, explain what Union Jack Oil is all about, please.
Well, I'm pleased to say Union Jack, we can now describe as being a producer and an explorer. And what we do, we cherry-pick projects off of other onshore companies. People know how it all works. A company has 100% of the project. To get rid of some of the risk, they offer it around, and we do the best deal we feel we can at the time, and we end up with a percentage. Now, our percentages, we've been getting a bit bolder lately with some, 20% in Piscataway, and we've upped our stake in Biscafort, which is going to be drilled mid-year. So we're a bit bolder. So we basically cherry-pick projects. And Graham Bull, our geologist, and some independent people work on our behalf to ensure that we get the best technical data from these, and hopefully we get success in the end.
Yeah. So how many assets are you invested into at the moment?
We're invested in 12, but some of them are linked. Like if you take Louth, that would be connected with the... with Keddington oil field, so they're all connected, and the majority of them are all in the up in the either the East Midlands and the Humber Basin. That's our hunting ground. We've got something going on down in the Weald. We've a very small interest in Homewood with Europa, but we're not thinking about going south for a lot more. That's for sure. We like it where we're at, but it's nice. Homewood is good.
Yeah, okay.
Planning the situations there, as everyone knows. Hopefully one day everything will be fine there. But, our main hunting ground is up north. That's where we think the low-hanging fruit is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what would you say, David, is at the moment, if you have a flagship project, which is the one would you say is that?
Oh, it's got to be Wrestle, hasn't it? It has to be. It's a discovery. It was the first well we drilled and the first discovery. And since that time, we had about 7%. We're up to 15 now. And I make no secret of the fact I'd love as much as we could get of that. The stumbling block at the moment is planning. And I know that applications are going in, and one has gone in to extend the planning this time. Hopefully everything will be sorted out and we can get into production, and that's when the company sees the sea change with production, major production, major cash flow, and dare I say it, profit. Mm-hmm. We'll try, but it's no reason. If you look at the figures, they're stunning. So that's the flagship. It's a great discovery, great well, nice and clean, technically very, very good. So, fingers crossed on that one. But I'd like to think maybe fingers crossed is being a bit, underestimating. Egdon have done a good job in getting the new application sorted, so why not?
Yeah, and so when... So that's is that the next stage in that appeal is in this month, isn't it?
Well, it's a new application.
Okay.
It is a completely new application, and when the inspector... In the original appeal, we basically put a blueprint out and saying, look, guys, this is, I've got doubts about groundwater and all this sort of thing. So prove to me that everything is fine. And for the last 3 months, that's what Egdon has been doing. Mm-hmm. Doing some great studies, and hopefully it will be enough to provide all the information the council need.
Yeah.
There was no reason that... Everything looks good, so we just hope.
Okay, and as far as actual activity, rather than having to wrestle with the council here, so what's next? Is Biscathorpe the next bit of news we could expect?
Well, like I said earlier, I'm looking for deals now. I've done my bit. The annual report's out of the way. Everything's out that should be out. So, like I said, I'm going to do what my job title says it does. Let's look for things to get to do.
Yeah, yeah, and you've got plenty of cash at the moment.
We're fine. We've got over 2 million.
Yeah. Okay. So
and, a lot of people say, "Oh, well, you raised money," and but if you look at our balance sheet, there's no, you know, you raise a million, you get more than a million on the balance sheet with assets. You know, we don't fritter money.
Yeah.
Our running costs are probably 50% of a lot of the companies of the same ilk as us, maybe even lower.
Right, okay. And so it's interesting, you're still looking for deals. Are you finding at the moment, with in the oil price going up, that it's becoming trickier to find, you know, good deals or not?
Not really, no. That's a great question, Justin, because the oil, we've always been, I don't know if it's lucky, if people like us, or some people do anyway, you can't be liked by everyone, but we use SP Angel and Turner Pope and other brokers, you know, we're all get on with each other, and we're pretty confident that if we get a nice deal come up, we present it and say, look, we need the money for this. And we've always been pretty good at keeping our head above water financially. But I think the damage was done when the oil price dipped below 30. I think it did. It went to 28, I believe.
Or did it
even 40? A lot of these companies were damaged. They were beaten up with no hope, and they were underfinanced. And all the big deals, or the deals that they had, they couldn't accommodate on their balance sheet. So therefore, there are deals still around to be done by companies who maybe have upgraded and the deal's too small for them, or companies that really have decided they don't want to do onshore UK anymore and go for bigger fish. You know, it's horses for courses. And we stated what we do, and this is what we do. Onshore UK, can you make a living from it? You bet you can.
Yeah.
You know, we're not into North Sea. You know, if anyone ever thinks that we're going to go for a 50 or 100 million barrel field, no, that's not us. But can we make money? Yeah. So I hope I've explained what I mean. The damage, there are still great deals to be done. Sometimes they fall in your lap. Sometimes you've got to keep on and be a blinking nuisance.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we've been pretty lucky.
Yeah, yeah. So essentially, you know, it's you're not going for these high-impact exploration, super wildcat drills that, you know, and I don't think many private investors understand that odds are very much stacked against, like, 4-5-1 chance, even more than that sometimes on these high-impact exploration and wildcat things.
They are. You know, even believe it or not, 8-1, 10-1.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I can reel off a whole raft of wells where, you know, and this is, nothing's changed. I've been in this game, God, 50 years nearly. I know it's terrible, but and you've had all the old oil companies from the 70s, and you see the share price going mad, and what's the news? Dry hole. But nothing's ever going to change, and there'll always be speculators, but which is good. Mm-hmm. You need these guys in the market. Mm-hmm. But we tend to go onshore risk. We try to cut it down to about 3-1, 2-1. Mm-hmm. No, some of our, like your Homewood well, is a 50%.
Yeah.
That's basically unheard of. But it doesn't mean to say that it's going to come in. Mm. But at least you cut the risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but if you take Biscafor, that is a high-impact well. If that happens, you could be talking 40 million barrels of oil. Mm. Mind you, it's a big if. But even on a worst case, 14, 15 million barrels. So yeah, you know, it's a great prospect, and it's crying out to be drilled. And as I say, we're a little bit more hands-on than we used to be. We've got a great external team on the technical bits and pieces, and they're good, but it also means that they can make you spend money or stop you spending money, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. But if there's any flaws, we're pretty risk adverse, even though we're in a risk market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, listen, if someone's listening to this and likes your spread of the risk here and what you're involved in, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, as I always say, there's risk attached. However, we try and do as it says on the tin, and I think we've done that in the past. The news flow for this year and beyond is very, very good. There's lots of things happening, lots of things going on, and hopefully some new things as well. And last of all, which I think is most important, we're transparent. Everyone knows how we operate, and if shareholders wish to ask me a question, they always do. They're not shy in doing that. Mm-hmm. So I think we give good value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. David, it's good to chat to you, and you've got a lot going on this year, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much for chatting to us.
Okay, Justin, marvellous. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications from the red corner. In the blue corner is me. All right, Al.
Good, Jess. Yeah, I'm limbering up here. I've worked up a sweat, so I'm ready to go.
I just said it like that, not because we're against each other, but I've just been watching the quick clip of the press conference of Hay Bellew. Are you aware of that fight, David Hay and Tony Bellew?
Yes, I'm aware of it, but to be honest, I don't follow boxing. However, I do follow Anthony Joshua because he's a fantastic athlete and a great role model. The rest of them, to be honest, leave me a bit cold.
Well, it's a rematch, and David Hay was favorite last time, and Bellew actually beat him. A Liverpoolian guy, he's in Rocky VI, I think he was in. But it was a bit of a surprise, but not for Tony Bellew. I quite like the guy. He's psychologically, he's quite sharp, all boxing matches, you know, he was bigging it up last time, Hay was, and Bellew, but now Hay's had to eat a bit of humble pie, even though he did rupture his Achilles tendon in the actual boxing match. So, but yeah, they're fighting again this Saturday, but I saw about that. Anyway, before we get on to stocks, Al, I mean, I know you and me both hold a bit of feedback, and there was some news out today, which is quite interesting. That was Simon Sturge, the NED non-executive director, signed recently up to feedback. Yep. He's a big hitter, because he's also the chief operating officer of Merck Healthcare, and Merck, is a massive company, several billion dollars, in the double-digit billion dollars worth. But he's gone and bought more shares. Like, he had 6 million shares, and then he went and bought some more shares, like 500,000 shares, at 3.5p, which is pretty much the top of the market of late. You know, he's sort of bought at the high, but it does make you question, why is this guy buying shares at the high? You know, because let's be honest, and I did have this conversation on Twitter. I said, there's only one reason why you buy shares invariably, you know, and that's to make money. And so, you know, you would not buy shares unless you thought the share price was going to exceed that price you bought. And him being on, you know, sort of close to knowing the healthcare market, knowing feedback, there's something good there, isn't it? It's a good sign, that, you know?
Well, it is. I mean, let's not forget that feedback shares, I think about a year ago, touched as high as 5p. So they've actually been higher sort of over the past 18 months to 2 years. So 3.5p is a good point to buy in anyway. But if you just look at what's happening with the company, that we spoke about this last week, the momentum has increased. Last Friday, the company announced the CADRAN, the archive imaging service that also has a joint venture with Future Processing in Poland. They've renewed the contract with Papworth Hospital, so they supply the archive imaging to Papworth Hospital. So we had the GE deal last week that we spoke about. We had Papworth on Friday. Today, Simon Sturge has bought 500,000 shares at 3.5p.
It's a new agreement with Papworth. It's not renew. It's a new agreement. Yeah, I was just reading that. I thought that. Yeah, it's a new one.
That's right. Yeah, it's a new agreement with Papworth. So there's a real sense that the momentum at feedback is really starting to go up a gear, and really, I mean, here we are, 7-8 million market cap. It's we're still way off the mark from where this company could be. So very exciting times. I mean, it's great. I'm glad I'm still involved. Glad I didn't sell my shares, and I'm expecting great things.
Yeah, exactly. I always like the product, and like I said, they have had more sort of peer reviews and academic papers written on them. I mean, there's quite a few products, similar kind of products in the space, which is quite good. It proves there's a market out there. But they've had, feedback. Have had more peer and academic papers written on them than any other sort of papers. That's good. I always like the product. Now it seems to be getting some traction. What else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, I've got three more companies today. Just I want to talk about Andalas Energy, ADL. As you know, and we've spoken about this on many occasions in the past, and of course the focus for Andalas has up to now been all about gas-to-power projects in Indonesia. And for a variety of reasons, those projects are still pushing forward. But given the glacial speed at which developments like this work in Indonesia, we've just seen delay after delay. So, of course, the David Whitby, who was spearheading that push into Indonesia and developing the gas power projects, remains a shareholder in the company, but he's now stepped down, and Dr. Robert Arndt has stepped up to become chairman. Last year, Simon Gorringe stepped in as CEO, and listeners will know that I recorded a podcast with Simon a few months ago, and Simon basically set out what he planned to do with the company. Simon's experience really lies largely in oil and gas. He's had up to 40 years in the industry, so he's been around for a long time. Worked for ConocoPhillips, BHP Billiton, with Serica Energy and Soco, Kerry McGee, and a range of others. Robert Arnott, likewise, he's got a history with Shell, with Spring Energy. They developed a Norwegian field, which they then sold to Tullow Oil. He's been at Core Energy, Petroceltic. Between them, they have over 25 years of experience in the North Sea alone. So on Monday, in line with what Simon said he would do, which is to source a near-term cash generative project for Andalas, they announced that they'd acquired a 14.75% stake in the Badger prospect, which is one of the largest undrilled prospects in the North Sea, which is intersected by pipework and infrastructure from other fields. Now, they've done this by raising paying $125,000 for this stake. They also raised a total of $600,000 at 0.017p. They bought a stake in Eagle Drilling, which owns 67% of this license. Now, this is one of the largest undrilled licenses. And I suppose if you're looking for a comparison, you can look at what i3 Energy are doing at the moment, which is they bought into the... Or they own the license for the Blake field, which is obviously they own 100% of the license, but that field in comparison to Badger is much smaller in terms of its potential resource. Now, the work program, which is already underway to assess and prepare the field, will be completed in a few months. It's, as I said, it's already plugged into this infrastructure, There's a very real prospect that we're going to see to hear an announcement in a few months that the prospect is ready to be drilled. It can be plugged into the existing infrastructure. Eagle may need to raise more money at that point to do it, but nonetheless, it will tap into this field when, of course, the oil price is at a very buoyant time. Now, if you want to look into this Badger prospect, you'll find out that Centrica actually operated the field some time ago when the oil price was far lower. I know I had a chat with a member of the board yesterday, and basically the board haven't seen volumes or potential volumes in a field like this since the 90s. So it's very encouraging. Now, shareholders, of course, in Andalas, and I'm one of them, have had a pretty rough ride over the past few years. And when this announcement came out yesterday, I had a number of tweets through from various shareholders saying, this is great, finally moving forward, all the way through to, this doesn't do anything at all. You know, what's happening in Indonesia? Now, I've gone through the pain as well. I've had a rough ride, and you invest in something, and you either take a decision, well, I'm going to pull out and be miserable about it, or I'm going to sort of take a view on what I think the board can do. And I think this board are very well. First of all, they have all the experience in the right area. Secondly, they look very well set to deliver something that could be cash generative in the near term, rather than the longer term play that is the Indonesian gas and oil prospects. for me, it transforms the potential in this company to something, to a company that has multiple assets in a number of areas. And somebody made the point to me as well that if Andalas were, say, a company with a 200 million market cap with several different assets dotted around, then the Indonesian asset would be very much icing on the cake, but would be very much valued into the longer term prospects for the company. But because up to now it's been a one trick pony, clearly the success or failure or delays have weighed heavily on the share price. But I think going forward from here, we're seeing a different company with a different operating dynamic, and something that I think we're going to see some meaningful drill results basically within a couple of months.
I've got to say, Al, you are the eternal optimist.
Well, it is what it is, Joss.
But we've seen a 99%, share degradation here, and it's
I know.
I jumped out. I got to say, and I took a big hit as well. But I just think, what has happened now? Have they literally basically given up on Indonesia? I know they say they're going to say that in the RNS, but it seems like, because Dave Whitby was heading up that part of it, it seems like that's fallen by the wayside pretty much, and we haven't had any sort of material updates from that sector.
Well, Dave Whitby remains. Dave Whitby remains a shareholder in the company, so he's a shareholder in the company. He stepped down as chairman because I think he nailed his colours to the mast with the gas to power project in Indonesia, and they simply couldn't execute on it. And I think going forward, you've either got to regard Andalas as a new company with a number of assets, or if we look back at what's happened, then yes, I mean we've all taken a massive hit. I mean, I've lost a lot of money personally on Andalas as well, but I think I've also made a lot of money on other investments, so I can be pragmatic and take a longer term view. But I think if you get anyone investing in these companies needs to have a spread of risk. So if one company goes down and another one does well, then you're balanced out, and hopefully you're going to make money in the longer term. But I'm looking also at the board here. You've got two people with 25 experience in the North Sea. This prospect was picked up for next to nothing, and they could have gone to someone else to raise the money to generate that investment, but they came to Andalas because Simon and because Robert were there. So I think if we focus on that as the actual asset that the company owns that's going to be near term, and then in the background you've got the Indonesia stuff, which may one day come up trumps and surprise us all. So that's my view, and I think as an investor, you've got to be pragmatic and you've got to move on.
Yeah, I know. I'll believe the progress here. I see. Hopefully, it's turned a corner here, and because it seems like what's been going on now for a couple of years has just seemed to have amounted to nothing, apart from a loss in investors' funds. So it's very annoying. I see why people are annoyed by it, because I think Dave did talk a big game. That's the trouble. I mean, if he was quite modest at the start, he talked a very big game, and he at one point, he did say at one point, you can send your kids to Eton if you invest in Andalas. And I don't think he should have said that. And
And
to be honest, I always say it's always a bit of a red flag if you get a CEO giving it the big sell. And listen, if you are listening to this podcast and you hear and you're impressed by a CEO giving it the big sell, to me that's a red flag. Always is. And it's a very fine line between giving it, being positive about the company's prospects, and overselling, And of course, you do want someone undersells, because sometimes, in fact, underselling is preferable to overselling, because at least the fundamentals speak for themselves. But
Right. Yeah. I think now, I mean, if you listen to and look at Simon Gorringer's conduct since he became CEO, he has been very cautious, very careful in what he said, and he's just said. He's basically said, this is me. I've got 40 years experience in the industry. This is what I've done. I'm seeking a near-term asset that we can invest in. And we'll let you know about that once we make progress. Now, they've already found that asset and made that investment. So far, he's delivering what he says. He is not being overly bullish about the prospects, but this has the potential to generate cash in the near term, relatively speaking. So I think you've got to, if you're a shareholder in Andalas, it's a very encouraging sign, but it's clearly there's still an awful long way to go.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say it's encouraging because you've had so much of your capital wasted away that, you know, you're not going to be so encouraged to think, oh, so, I think just almost it's, what he says, it's, what do you say, he's sick of the promises, really. And they're thinking, oh, so what? And just roll over you, most people will. And just think, oh, whatever. If you've got money in there which is worth anything, which most people aren't now. So do you think?
Yeah.
So there we are. So it's we'll see, you know. Again, I'm very sceptical as to what happened, but hopefully they'll move forward on this. But it seems, because obviously a lot wasn't happening in Indonesia. Anyway, let's crack on with another company, Al. What are you looking at?
Okay, ECR Minerals, Epicode ECR, as you'd imagine. Now, this company, it's a gold exploration company, and it has a number of gold prospects in the Victoria area in Australia. Now, if you Google Victoria and gold, the area has got a fantastic reputation. There's many historical workings there, but also all the way down to the amateur prospector, where you'll see videos online of people going out with their sort of bush hat and going out with a little pan and going to the river and siphoning through all the detritus in the stream to find gold nuggets. This area is renowned for producing gold nuggets. So ECR Minerals have a number of prospects in the region, and they also own one of the most fantastically named projects or resource projects that I've ever heard of, which is the Bung Bong Gold Project.
Yeah,
and it just rings, it rolls off the tongue, it's fantastic. So the CEO Craig Brown and his technical officer Rodney Boucher have been talking about this recently. They've currently got five people working on the ground, and they describe the mineralization in the area. They've got quartz pretty well at the surface. It's intersected by lots of road. There's the access is very good. So the actual drilling that's required is very little in relative terms, and they're doing six test holes to basically provide a detailed analysis and detailed sampling, and they reckon that'll be complete within a month. So we should be getting a lot more news flow from these prospects and from the Bung Bong prospects next month. The company have a series of other prospects. They've also acquired another prospect in the region called the Creswick Gold Project, and clearly with the resource they've got in the area, the people they've got on the ground, all of these prospects are close together, so they can work these and develop these pretty well at the same time. The company fully funded, they got $700,000 in the bank. They reckon the drilling and the works on Bung Bong are going to take $500,000. So this is a tiny company. It's got a market cap of just 2 million. Shares have been as high as 2.25p, as low as 0.8p. And that's currently where they are. So bless you, by the way.
Yeah. I had Craig on the podcast recently. Oh, sorry. Go on.
I listened to them. Bless you, Justin.
Sorry.
Bless you.
Oh, go on. Sorry.
I listened to that. I listened to the podcast with Craig, and you know, this is a tiny company. I don't think you know, with given the mineralization in the area and the experience in the team, there's an awful lot of upside to come. But I think what's exciting is that, again, you know, it's a near term project. You know, we're going to see results pretty soon. We're going to see some data from the drilling pretty soon, which could potentially be transformational. But as I said right at the beginning, this is a well-established area for gold, to the point where there are lots of amateur sites showing people trundling around this area on the push bikes and walking through the bush and basically sampling for gold just by sifting through the sediment that's on the surface.
Yeah. Sorry, do you know what? I'm in the middle of a sneezing fit here.
Hello. Bless you.
Maybe I'm allergic to ECR, or bung bong, whatever it is.
Bung bong, yes, yeah. You've got a bung bong going on there, yeah. Jess, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to those draw results because they do know what they're doing, but. I can't stop, Al. I think I mean, do you know, it's like that. I remember seeing Roy Castle years and years ago interview this lady on, and she's held a world record for sneezing. And she was sneezing all the way through the interview. And it came to the end, and she nearly stopped. He said, and she's been sneezing for 2 years.
And, oh my word.
And then she stopped for like 30 seconds. 30 seconds then went. And he thought she'd stop me. Oh, we thought you stopped then. But anyway, yeah, so ECR, always worth waiting, I think, for the results of the drills, because jumping before, it's a bit of a gamble. But
it is a gamble, but I think at this level, I mean, it's at the year low market cap, as I say, just on 2 million. It's worth a punt. And I know a lot of my old colleagues who invest into these companies will say, well, they'll just punt, have a little punt here have several small punts across, say, 5 or 10 companies, and on the basis that some will come at trumps and some won't. But,
yeah, but do you know what? I see that as a waste of capital, because I think, do you know what the difference is between a punt and an investment?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I think an investment is where you got odds in favour. A punt is odds against, and punting before draw results come out, that is a punt. Odds against, I think. But if you, I think stacking odds in your favour is the way forward for investing. And so wait, I'll wait. But it's a good level company. Then, as I'm saying, the guys behind it have done before. Craig, good track record, and.
That's the thing. Craig's got a good track record, but also this region has too. If you look at Victoria, it's a gold-rich environment, and they've got a team of people on the ground, but also the fact that the mineralization is so close to the surface, there isn't a huge amount of capital outlay, relatively speaking, to get the stuff out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Okay, anything else, Al?
Yes, wants to talk about a company we have spoken about before, but it was picked up last week by Dr. David Paul on VectorVest, but this interested me in particular because Expediator, of course, only listed last autumn. So Expediator XPD, so the stock, I think it launched it floated at 26p, and it's been as high as 66p on the air, currently trading at 60p. But the company they have integrated freight management they're headquartered in Essex. They've got offices across eight European countries, and they have an international network where they're focusing on linking Eastern Europe, the Balkans, and the Baltic with Western Europe, and a series of warehousing chains throughout there. So in February, Expedia announced results for the year. They raised just under 8 million to fund expansion, and they integrated three businesses into the company: EMT Logistics, Benfleet Forwarding, and Regional Express. Integrated them into Expediator at that point. And the revenues for the year, the group will be announcing results this month. They expect revenues to grow by 60% to 116 million, and also trading profits is expected to be ahead of the year, ahead of last year, simply because of the economies of scale that were generated by the acquisitions. All of this was picked up on VectorVest. The VectorVest have a series of metrics, including RT, relative timing, earnings growth rate, GRT, and so on. The relative timing metric basically flagged this up in March as a real growth opportunity. Now, it rates the opportunity on a scale of 0 to 2, and Expediator currently has a rating of 1.75, which is excellent. earnings growth at 20%, which is considered to be very good, and with the growth in the company, VectorVest currently has a rating of 69p against the current 60p price target. And I think I saw these guys speak at a shares evening early this year, where Stephen Blythe, the founder, basically explained the rationale and how the funds are going to be used for these acquisitions, and they're delivering already. It's a long standing company. It's been around for many years, and this is simply a process of acquisition combined with years and years of experience that his team have in the business. So Expedia is well funded now. It looks well positioned to expand into European markets, and in its first year as a listed company, it's already delivering great returns to investors, and it looks set to sort of power on and continue that way. So this is really one to watch. But also, go to the Brand UK website, go to the research sector, and have a look at this the story under the VectorVest link. It's well worth a read.
Marvellous, yes. I've had Stephen Blythe, CEO of Expedia, on before, and hopefully they come on very soon. I know that we're having chats with them, so hopefully we're going to get them on very soon again to update the market. But Expedia,
well,
the chart is amazing. Look at the chart there.
It is top right-hand corner stuff all the way. So, yeah, Expedia.
Marvellous, Expedia. Al, thanks for that, fella. And hopefully you speak next week when... Maybe that's a sign that spring is actually arriving. Maybe we've got some hay fever. Maybe, hopefully, at last.
I was going to say, take some antihistamine right now.
Yeah, no problem. Cheers, Al. Speak next week.
Cheers, Jeff. Speak next week.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, it's... Photon LED, that's PSL. At four, 88 Energy. At three, Mobile Streams, MOS. At two, EVRH, or EVR Holdings, I should say. That's VR, of course. And number one, the most followed company, for the second day in a row, it's United Oil and Gas. Worth actually reading my blog, did an update, and also they've updated their presentation, so worth checking that out. Just go to their page. And you can see the updated presentation there. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Feedback. That's Director Shareholding. And that's, of course, Simon Sturge buying more shares again in the company at the recent highs. At four, it's Codel Minerals. Additional lithium mineralization confirmed in Mali. At three, EVR Holdings, placing to raise up to £25 million. At two, a memorandum of understanding for exploitation diamonds in Zimbabwe from Vast Resources. And number one most liked RNS came from Motif Bio, and it's Revive 2 study results published in Journal. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.